We acknowledge the Noongar people, the traditional owners of the land the upcoming game is played on, and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Welcome to the 2021 AFL Premiership season on AFL Nation.
Pitches on its point, goes over the top of Power Pepper, but it sits for Rosie, who cuts the 50, doubles back, opens it up, exquisite skill, bounces it home.
Bontempelli, can he get enough on the ball? Oh, yes he can! It's Bontempelli! A glorious kick for goal.
Minigola releases it to Cameron, he's kicking for six! Jeremy Cameron charging away.
Hooker's down there. Three cats jump against him. Stringer's got the crumb. Runs outside of the boot. And he's nailed it. It couldn't be goal of the night with the opening goal of the night, could it?
Breaks the tackle. Wobbles one. Where are you, buddy? There he is. He juggles the mark at the front.
Hand pass inboard. Petrarca, can he get it home? Yes, he can.
Handed it to Green. Open goal. And he'll slot it with ease. Toby Green versus the world, and Green still winning.
Great strike, magnificent kick from Joe Danaher. Massive white smile spread across his face.
Welcome to AFL Nation.
It is a night framed almost entirely around the Demon Dream and the longest active premiership drought in our game. Melbourne hasn't been better placed in more than half a century, and steadily the faithful are giving themselves over to the idea. And given the sentiment that courses through this final series, Geelong's role is really limited to that of potential party pooper. The first preliminary final in Perth, it's an awesome prospect. Melbourne and Geelong coming up on AFL Nation. Jared Waitley alongside Anthony Hudson. Hello, Huddo.
Hello, Jared. Good evening to all the Melbourne fans and the Geelong fans, but the Melbourne fans particularly. Yes, I guess Chris got his Dr. Evil tonight, isn't he? As he tries to engineer bringing the Demons down. I was in Perth for that fateful. I think Geordie might have been there in 2018. And I always talk about it. It was the loudest noise I've ever heard. To me, it was even louder than Richmond in that preliminary final against GWS. It was an extraordinary noise. It was a hot, hot day. You got off the plane. I was there with the old Melbourne types, your Dr. Turths and Billy Guest and all that on the plane heading over with such high hopes. And it was extinguished just like that. And we know the history going back further to 87, unbelievable, which I revisited during the week. That 87 preliminary fight, how Melbourne lost that, I've got no idea. But I think you summed it up well when you said gradually the Melbourne supporters, and certainly the ones that I know well, have just had to embrace it, that sort of had to go against themselves. Well, if you don't embrace this, there's no point actually barracking for
them. That's right.
We'll see how they go tonight.
So everyone who's walking in their 5K radius will have come across the odd house in red and blue. Yeah. There's no other houses decorated in other colours, but just every now and then there's a Melbourne house, and bless them. Good luck to them. Jared Healy's first club was the Demons. He played 130 of his 211 games with the Demons. He's a Melbourne best and fairest. He never played a final in the red and the blue. Jared, welcome.
Jared, it is good to be here, and it's amazing. I know a lot of those Melbourne supporters you talk about well. I know them really well. In fact, we spoke to a guy called Rowan Davis who has put a mural up on his fence. It's about a 30-metre by 2-metre mural. It's caused traffic jams through Armidale. And I spoke to him last night on the radio, and he gave a really interesting insight into the journey that he had been on as a supporter. He, as a kid, was in the mascot's jumper, and now he's a well-to-do, he's a very, very smart property guy, but he's still a supporter at heart. He's still that kid in the mascot. And he just felt that given that there won't be this ability to go to the game, that he was going to say, stuff it. I know my lot. I'm not going to get down and about. We can't see it. I'm going to put the biggest thing up I can ever see, and he's done it. And I think a lot of people have embraced it. And it has been interesting just along this year. Melbourne, to me, have been the standout all year. It's the most talented group of Melbourne players I've seen for a long time, and it was last year and potentially the year before, and it's got better through organic growth and the addition of a couple. But it has been amazing just the denial that Melbourne supporters have been going through.
Self-defence.
They don't want to be hurt again. And
the first thing one of my mates does at the start of the year is to back Melbourne to not make the eight.
That's
the first thing he does. And it's everything else is wrapped around that.
That's not Mark Rothfield, is it?
Because
that's exactly what he does. But it's exciting, isn't it? I mean, they are in the box seat. It's their premiership to lose to a degree. I think maybe we're underestimating Port Adelaide a little bit when we say that. But clearly there's two standouts. It's Port Adelaide and it's the Demons. The Demons are on top for mine. But, gee, we've got a really great weekend coming up. Then we've got an absolute shocker. And then eventually we'll get wound up again for the grand final in 2 weeks' time.
It's going to be an interesting 2 weeks to get through. For those who are a little bit sort of faint-hearted in these things, it's going to be extreme torture, I would imagine. Jordan Lewis played the last 3 years of his career with Melbourne. He was part of the 2018 Cinderella run into the finals that ended abruptly, as Hutto mentioned.
Jordy, oh, sorry, Jordan.
Welcome.
Good evening, boys.
Did you think that was nasty of Hutto to bring that up?
Yeah, he's lucky he's sitting over there and
if he hadn't
won
four flags, I wouldn't have done it. But I think he's had his share of success.
It's a balanced commentary team tonight, so we can just let it flow and you don't have to be worried about anyone saying there's bias anywhere. But, I mean, if you're a Melbourne or a Geelong supporter right now, you've just got to fill yourself with optimism because it is one of those great days and... There's a lot riding on it for both teams. Obviously, the prize at the end is a grand final. But right now, the game hasn't started, so you've got, what is it, an hour and 45 minutes to just dream. And that's the beauty about being a supporter, I suppose, of both clubs. And you said it's nerve-wracking. It's all the other emotions. You try not to read the news. You try not to watch the TV. You might check if there's some late-ins or late-outs, but it is a two-hour period. And if you think of how nervous you are as a supporter, think about the players because they're going through the same emotions.
Prelim final weekend, it's almost better than grand final weekend. There's four clubs still in it. Generally, we go to the MCG and there's a big supporter base for both.
It's the pure day, isn't it?
It's the pure
day.
You
can nearly touch it. You can nearly touch the grand final. I know it's not the same this year, but you start to dream about the week, you know, the grand final parade. You've got to organise tickets. Everyone's coming to town. It's the biggest thing in Melbourne at the moment in that week when it's here. So, yeah, I think being over in the West, particularly from both of their point of view and being in the hub environment, could play into their hands. You've got a lot of time to think about it, but you don't get the external recognition, the external noise at the moment that could potentially build some false hope within the playing group.
So we know that they're minor premiers and they've had the week off. So this is the best chance in 57 years. I'll make the case, Jared, to you that this is Melbourne's biggest game in 57 years tonight.
Yeah, you don't have to convince me, Jared. I think it's... you go back to 88 when they last played in the grand final. It wasn't the last time they played in...
2000.
But even in 88... they didn't really have the side. They were coming up against a super side, and Hawthorn had, I reckon, about 17 All-Australians and State of Origin players on every line. They were a super power.
That was the first grand final I went to, and it was so disappointing. The Ben Johnson race at halftime was up on the big screen was the Carl Lewis race of the Olympics was the highlight of the game because it was all over as a contest.
Yeah, there was this one moment where Gary Ayres, who was playing midfield at the time and probably half a dozen others, just bulldozed the ball forward. It was almost like it was men against boys, but it's reverse this time around. I mean, Melbourne go in with this incredibly talented side. I think more talented than Geelong. They've got more talent on more lines. Geelong's forward line probably is the equal, if not better, than Melbourne's midfield. I think Melbourne's is better, significantly better. But, you know, I think Melbourne have still got to do the job. And they'll go in next week really confident. I think that Simon Goodwin's done an amazing job in just keeping everybody balanced. And I think Max Gawn's done a great job. I think the decision to make Max Gawn captain was an inspired one, even though it would have hurt Viney.
And I think we might get to see the benefit of there not being a break pre-finals. So you've got a side that's had to go through the hard way and had to, you know, play every single week. And we think we'll see a side in Melbourne and Port Adelaide tomorrow night who have earned the rest, who enjoyed the rest, and then hopefully bring that energy to the contest. And I'm a big advocate for the no-buy pre-finals because it just – there is just no reward for finishing top four, but you get a second chance, but you don't get that break for winning the first
game. Are you a big advocate of the bye pre-grand final?
Oh, no. That's
I mean, it's got to be one of the more uninspiring decisions in Gillen's reign, surely. This just lacks any sort of logic.
Yep.
I mean, if there is a problem and the Cowboy decides to shut it down, at least we've got a week off. If we have a week off and then the Cowboy shuts it down, we've got 2 weeks off and we lose all manner of momentum.
What about the explanation that was given around getting the teams over to Perth so they can participate, so they can train in front of fans, which included moving Port Adelaide, should they qualify, for the Brownlow, and spend the week in Perth? Their fans are in the other states. You are moving them away from their fans so they can't be part of it.
Yeah, when an excuse lacks credibility, you know that there's an ulterior motive that no one wants to talk about. I'm not quite sure what that is. Some have suggested it's getting a lot of staff over there so they can entertain the good people at Toyota or whoever it is. But surely you just follow the principles of the last 2 years, and that is, get it done.
Yep.
Let's get it done before it is undone.
And you only need to see what's happening in the cricket today over in England.
Yeah, so the
England.
First day's play is not happening at Old Trafford.
Yeah. So it can we all know it can come from anywhere at any time at the moment. Just getting back to the teams, Jared, it's amazing to think that Melbourne don't have a 200-game player.
Yeah. Well, this is the great comparison. I mean, we've all talked about Geelong. I think they'll have another throw at the stumps next year. They may load up again with whoever they can and have another crack whilst Tom Hawkins is going well. But Melbourne's got 4 Rising Star nominees. Mm. I mean, they are, and I've said this to a couple of friends and a couple of family members who are very, very serious Melbourne supporters. This is not the be-all and end-all. This is the start of an era. This is a 5 or 6 year opportunity. And if Melbourne get their recruiting right, there's no reason why they can't be a superpower for a decade.
The test match is off.
Wow.
It's cancelled.
Right.
And India forfeit, and it becomes 2-2. I'm going to have to spend a couple of minutes. You just talk amongst yourselves for a moment.
I think that'll be disputed. But anyway.
It may be disputed, but it reinforces the point, doesn't it?
It just seems...
And we're going to talk more about this down the track without question, because there's nothing else to talk about next week except why the hell are we talking about the bye?
Yeah, good luck to all you media performers who are on.
Yeah, imagine if you had a radio show every day and a nightly TV show. I mean, would it not be as bad in normal circumstances if you used the week, this was the week off and you had the Brownlow, you had all the awards and you had other stuff as well that was going on?
Oh, I'm a big one for just playing. In a normal year, what you don't want to do as a player is to hang around and just to have to draw it out. You want continuity. So, you know, think of Melbourne's situation. If they and Port Adelaide, they play the first final, they have a break. They play the prelim final, then they have another break. There's just no continuity.
So if Geelong or the Bulldogs win, it's a huge advantage for them, isn't it?
It may be, yeah. Because
potentially a huge advantage.
Because they've clearly played every round. This might be their chance just to get that week off, that energise and a little bit of a dip in training loads, and that might be the perfect way to do it if that's to be the case. But I think if talking lists and age and experience, you know, Melbourne are the third youngest list in the competition. Geelong are clearly number one. Mm. They're 10th for experience. So they are in their window, as we would call it. So I agree with Jared. If it does shape to be their best year for a long time, it does shape to be an important match. But if things go wrong tonight, they are still in this phase for the next 3 to 5 years.
And what of Geelong? What's their... Are they... Is it... So they're being fitted up as this is it.
No, I don't agree with the this is it theory. I agree. I think that this is nearly it. And I spoke about that last week or 2 weeks ago when you could see what was going to happen to the club when your best 5 players aren't there. And that's not that far away, because most of them are 32 or above. And they weren't there 2 weeks ago. They're out in the ground, but they weren't there, and they were just horrible. So we know what's coming for Geelong. They're probably a little bit better placed than just this savage dip, because there are some kids that they're not playing at the present time, but they're going to be out of contention for a fair period of time. Unless a few like Radigalia, unless Radigalia can turn himself into Hawkins. I mean, that would really help. But I think they've got to throw out the stumps. you know, Dangerfield has had an average to poor finals campaign. Might be reasons there with his finger. But if they're to win tonight, he has to play well. If they're to win tonight, their A-graders have to play the game of their season, because it's, you know, Melbourne are probably up in the talent department. It wouldn't be that often that Geelong are playing a more talented side.
And yet Geelong were 44 points up, you know, close to three-quarter time just 4 weeks ago.
I went back and watched that game, and there was a dominant period for 10 minutes, but the rest of the first half was, I mean, if you didn't look at the scoreboard, you would think it was quite even, yet they just sort of, goal here, you know, Hawkins goal, Cameron lucky goal. So it just was that lead that just built and built. And then they had that 10-minute patch where they just, you know, everything worked and Melbourne were completely off. And then the second half came around. So I think if you're Geelong, you're reviewing more what happened in the second half, how it went so wrong, especially around the ball and everything else. And
they fell back into kicking to a lever and that Melbourne defensive structure. So you look at that two ways. Either they haven't got a way past, or they've done that and they'll not try to avoid that.
So that for me is the fascination with how the game unfolds tonight. Because I think in that game, watching Geelong, when they sped the ball movement up, it actually caught Melbourne out because they couldn't get set. Yet we know how Geelong want to play. They want to build the ball up. You just think if that is the case, May and Lever will set themselves up down the line. It's so important that they don't have an Alir-Alir impact like they did against Port Adelaide. Well,
the difference is Radical Alir, isn't it? I mean, that's the difference from that match, and it's the difference from the game in round 23
And it was also Jeremy Cameron last week played a bit further up the ground, so he can be that, compete in the air and turn around and deliver it inside forward 50.
Ultimately, I reckon the game is a ground ball game and it's a running game. And it's also a kicking game, and Geelong are focusing on the kicking. I don't think they've got the running game. Yet Melbourne have got the kicking game, they've got the marking game, they've got the running power. And Richmond's domination was based on a lot of things, but ultimately I reckon Richmond's greatest strength was they had about 13 elite runners in their side. And Melbourne, look at their running power. I don't see any club competing with Melbourne's running power. So if they get other things right and they run like their lives depend on it, it's going to be very – and I'm talking defensive running as well as attacking running. It's I think, the foundation of their great of a great victory this year.
And sorry, Jared, I think that the other thing that I look at in both defences, which enables you to move the ball, is Melbourne's got a good balance between left and right footed players, whereas for me, Geelong there's a lot of right-footed players. I mean, Isaac Smith's probably the one that comes back and allows them to open up the other side of the ground. But you see continuously these players turn onto their dominant foot, which keeps them on that skinny side, doesn't allow them to open up the other side of the ground, which makes it hard to move the ball, especially off turnover. So if Isaac Smith's not back there assisting with ball movement, I find they just really try and control that right-hand side. That's how they try and move the ball. But, you know, Isaac Smith will have to have a big game.
Were you surprised that Geelong didn't bring in a midfielder for a midfielder? So Zach Tuohy here was the... We talked to Matthew Knights last week about how you're choosing your sub. They went with Guthrie. He came on the ground, so Parfitt gets injured. The speculation is that it would be Higgins or Narkle or Simpson or a midfielder. Duncan's role would change, but instead they've gone with another defender.
And I think that points to the height that Melbourne have got in their forward line, but they've also got some pretty handy ground ball players. Pickett's a good player. Spargo's a good player. Bullen can get the ball on the deck. Arms goes forward, kicks goal. So this will be, I mean, Chris Scott has a reason. Clearly they're worried about how tall Melbourne can be up in that forward line. They're trying to cover that, which probably means
somebody
is going into the middle of the ground. It might be Tuohy.
Yeah, it's how they want to use Zach Tuohy, I think. To me, last week, he looked really important for them in the back half. Then he was forced to go onto the wing, but I think he'll be on the wing tonight.
Yeah, well, I think he needs to play back because that was – Melbourne Geelong looked so good when he was at half back. He's a great user of the ball. He's got run and carry. It was only when Parfitt went down, then they had to start to – rearrange their midfield group. They lost that drive out of defence. They lost that nature to be aggressive and set up the play, and they just look like a totally different side. I think he needs to play back.
Maybe he'll play off the wing and back. I mean, talking to people in and around Geelong, they almost don't have positions. They have you're a back half player, you're a front half player.
Yeah.
And Isaac Smith is a wingman, but he's a back half player. And I think Tui is probably going to be a wingman and just play in the back half. He may even kick the ball out half a dozen times, but I reckon it bounces, he'll probably come off the wing.
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge. If his endurance base is up to it, because he might match up on Langdon. So, yeah.
Well, this is the run. I mean, you talk Langdon, Gorn's running capacity is immense. Petrarca, Oliver, Viney. I think Harms, the improvement in Harms over 3 or 4 years is extraordinary because he goes forward, he can tag. Wouldn't be surprised if he nailed somebody in that middle. Brayshaw can run, and he's found a little bit of form, and he needed to over the last couple of weeks. And, I mean, you've got Spargo and Picker. They are such a running machine. It's frightening if you're a member of the Cats.
What of the intangibles? So historic burdens are not easily shed. As Geelong fans will tell you, 2007, the preliminary final night was the night they almost froze. Yeah. They did so. There was... they were almost incapacitated by it.
It was a horrible night.
It was only Ottens and Ablett.
Tom Harley dropped a mark in the opening 50 seconds at centre half back.
Milburn and it might have been Harley were coming out of ball. They both stopped and it landed in between them. Like it was almost spooky, and it owed to the past as much as it did the present that night.
I don't think there is. I think if you look at the two sides from 18 and now, there's 11 different players. And a lot of the players that were playing back then were just young. This was their first experience. It wasn't a great experience, but I mean, there was no Lever does his knee halfway through the year. May's not there. So that already is a much better improvement. I mean, Petrarca's game has gone to another level. Oliver was, solid enough back then, but clearly gone to another level. Max Gorn become captain. So there's so much that has changed. I think you could maybe make the point if it was West Coast prelim final in Perth, then those memories might come back. But I think different side, a lot has changed personnel and experience-wise. I don't think there'd be any lingering of those memories. I just don't.
Yeah, I think they're figments of supporters' imagination. They may just have had a bad night, and yet, because of what the history says, we all gravitate to the 1 + 1 = 2. It's the pressure of what happened a decade ago, well, through the last 10 years, etc. But, I mean, I know there's this narrative about, Melbourne this and Melbourne that over 30 years. These blokes weren't born when a lot of that turmoil was going on. These kids don't, they're there to make their own history. These guys are alpha males, most of them. They're not worried about what happened in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s.
So you don't think it lives in the walls of a footy club?
I think it lives... No, I don't. That's one thing I absolutely deny. I don't think it lives in the walls of a footy club. It may live in the people within the footy club, and that's why they're horrible. And that's why you've got to ship people out and bring winners in. But I don't think it's a DNA scenario, as a lot of people tend to suggest.
Sitting in the cupboard there somewhere.
Just poke his head out.
So that's Melbourne and Geelong that sets up before us tonight. There was just a hint around Henderson who had a fitness test. If he's had a fitness test on his hamstring yesterday, he shouldn't be playing, regardless whether he got through it or not.
Is
not
it
on what
be
we
one
saw
the,
2 weeks ago.
The world-famous Chris Scott late moves. Henderson out, therefore that explains why Guthrie's in and Narkel comes in.
Well, you'd think if they were going to do funny buggers that they wouldn't have named Guthrie, though, wouldn't you? So I don't know.
Just on Geelong, I mean, it goes back to the issue with Geelong. That, like, Chris Scott won a flag, and I think it was his first year, didn't he? And he's been such a successful coach without having quite nailed it. Halftime last year was so close, and yet he was robbed by one of the greatest players the game has ever seen. And yet, I think people are already writing his epitaph that didn't get the job done. Well, my God, he has got the job done better than most for an extended period of time. And I think sometimes he's got them to the position of a potential flag with a group that probably shouldn't get the flag. They're not quite strong enough to get the flag. So sometimes history is really unkind. I remember Tom Hafey got Collingwood to, was it 5 grand finals when you include the draw, and didn't win one. But you have a look at the side. The side was a really good side, but it wasn't a champion side. And yet sometimes... You know, sometimes the group can outperform and get to nearly there, and then they get run over by a great team.
I think the criticism has also come for Scotties because there hasn't been an adaptation to to the way the modern game is played. We see a lot of the sides, like these new and up-and-coming sides like Sydney and Essendon and Melbourne, have become a little bit more aggressive in terms of the way they move the ball. They just haven't changed, but they've put themselves in another prelim final.
Maybe they haven't got the running power to do the change.
Our pre-game show is for Beaumont Tiles Trade Club. Jared Healy and Jordan Lewis will turn our attention to the Port Adelaide Bulldogs prelim as well. The Bulldogs are enduring a lot at the moment, and we'll talk Carlton's latest sacking as well. Experience the convenience of buying your new Hyundai online with Hyundai's Click to Buy. It's easy to compare models, configure your Hyundai, and make a deposit online through the secure Click to Buy process. Search Hyundai Click to Buy for details. You're listening to AFL Nation, the first preliminary final tonight.